Side 5. Unfinished Tales of Numenor and Middle-earth by J.R.R. Tolkien. Continuing with Narn y Hin Hurin on page 117. Thus, even as Mablung crept among the rocks, seeking whether he could ford the wild river upon the fallen stones of the bridge, suddenly Glaurung came forth with a great blast of fire and crawled down into the stream. Then straightway there was a vast hissing, and huge vapors arose, and Mablung and his followers that lurked near were engulfed in a blinding steam and foul stench, and the most fled as best they could guess towards the Spy Hill. But as Glaurung was passing over Narog, Mablung drew aside and lay under a rock and remained, for it seemed to him that he had an errand yet to do. He knew now indeed that Glaurung abode in Nargothrond, but he was bidden also to learn the truth concerning Hurin's son, if he might. And in the stoutness of his heart, therefore, he purposed to cross the river as soon as Glaurung was gone and search the halls of Felagund, for he thought that all had been done that could be for the keeping of Morwen and Nienor. The coming of Glaurung would be marked, and even now the riders should be speeding towards Dorioth. Glaurung therefore passed Mablung by, a vast shape in the mist, and he went swiftly, for he was a mighty worm, and yet lithe. Then Mablung behind him forded Narog in great peril, but the watchers upon Amon Ethir beheld the issuing of the dragon, and were dismayed. At once they bade Morwen and Nienor mount, without debate, and prepared to flee eastward as they were bidden. But even as they came down from the hill into the plain, an ill wind blew the great vapors upon them, bringing a stench that no horses would endure. Then, blinded by the fog, and in mad terror of the dragon reek, the horses soon became ungovernable, and went wildly this way and that, and the guards were dispersed, and were dashed against trees to great hurt, or sought vainly one for another. The neighing of the horses and the cries of the riders came to the ears of Glaurung, and he was well pleased. One of the elf riders, striving with his horse in the fog, saw the Lady Morwen passing near, a gray wraith upon a mad steed, but she vanished into the mist, crying, "Nienor!" and they saw her no more. But when the blind terror came upon the riders, Nienor's horse, running wild, stumbled, and she was thrown. Falling softly into grass, she was unhurt, but when she got to her feet, she was alone, lost in the mist, without horse or companion. Her heart did not fail her, and she took thought, and it seemed to her vain to go towards this cry or that, for cries were all about her, but growing ever fainter. Better it seemed to her, in such case, to seek again for the hill. Thither, doubtless, Mablung would come, before he went away, if only to be sure that none of his company had remained there. Therefore, walking at guess, she found the hill, which was indeed close at hand, by the rising of the ground before her feet. And slowly, she climbed the path that led up from the east, and as she climbed, so the fog grew thinner, until she came at last out into the sunlight on the bare summit. Then she stepped forward and looked westward, and there, right before her, was the great head of Glaurung, who had even then crept up from the other side, and before she was aware, her eyes looked in his eyes, and they were terrible, being filled with the fell spirit of Morgoth, his master. Then Nienor strove against Glaurung, for she was strong in will, but he put forth his power against her. "What seek you here?" he said, and constrained to answer, she said, "I do but seek one Turin that dwelt here a while, but he is dead, maybe." "I know not," said Glaurung. "He was left here to defend the women and weaklings, but when I came he deserted them and fled. A boaster, but a craven, it seems. Why seek you such a one?"
"You lie," said Nienor. "The children of Hurin at least are not craven. We fear you not."
Then Glaurung laughed, for so was Hurin's daughter revealed to his malice.
"Then you are fools, both you and your brother," said he, "and your boast shall be made vain, for I am Glaurung."
Then he drew her eyes unto his, and her will swooned, and it seemed to her that the sun sickened, and all became dim about her. And slowly a great darkness drew down on her, and in that darkness there was emptiness. She knew nothing, and heard nothing, and remembered nothing. Long Mablung explored the halls of Nargothrond, as well he might for the darkness and the stench, but he found no living thing there, nothing stirred amid the bones, and none answered his cries. At last, being oppressed by the horror of the place, and fearing the return of Glaurung, he came back to the doors. The sun was sinking west, and the shadows of the far-off behind lay dark on the terraces and the wild river below. But away beneath Amon Ethir he descried, as it seemed, the evil shape of the dragon. Harder and more perilous was the return over Narog in such haste and fear, and scarcely had he reached the east shore and crept aside under the bank when Glaurung drew nigh. But he was slow now, and stealthy, for all the fires in him were burned low. Great power had gone out of him, and he would rest and sleep in the dark. Thus he writhed through the water and slunk up to the doors like a huge snake, ashen gray, sliming the ground with his belly. But he turned before he went in and looked back eastward, and there came from him the laughter of Morgoth, dim but horrible, as an echo of malice out of the black depths far away. And this voice, cold and low, came after.
"There you lie like a vole under the bank, Mablung the mighty. Ill do you run the errands of Thingol. Haste you now to the hill, and see what is become of your charge."
Then Glaurung passed into his lair, and the sun went down, and gray evening came chill over the land. But Mablung hastened back to Amon Ethir, and as he climbed to the top, the stars came out in the east. Against them he saw there standing, dark and still, a figure, as it were an image of stone. Thus Nienor stood, and heard nothing that he said, and made him no answer. But when at last he took her hand, she stirred, and suffered him to lead her away. And while he held her, she followed, but if he loosed her, she stood still. Then great was Mablung's grief and bewilderment, but no other choice had he but to lead Nienor so upon the long eastward way, without help or company. Thus they passed away, walking like dreamers, out into the night-shadowed plain. And when morning returned, Nienor stumbled and fell, and lay still, and Mablung sat beside her in despair.
"Not for nothing did I dread this errand," he said, "for it will be my last, it seems. With this unlucky child of men I shall perish in the wilderness, and my name shall be held in scorn in Dorioth, if any tidings indeed are ever heard of our fate. All else, doubtless, are slain, and she alone spared, but not in mercy."
Thus they were found by three of the company that had fled from Narog at the coming of Glaurung, and after much wandering when the mist had passed, went back to the hill, and finding it empty, they had begun to seek their way home. Hope then returned to Mablung, and they went on now together, steering northward and eastward, for there was no road back into Dorioth in the south, and since the fall of Nargothrond, the fairy wards were forbidden to set any across, save those that came from within. Slow was their journey, as for those that lead a weary child. But ever as they passed further from Nargothrond and drew nearer to Dorioth, so little by little strength returned to Nienor, and she would walk, hour by hour, obediently, led by the hand. Yet her wide eyes saw nothing, and her ears heard no words, and her lips spoke no words. And now at length, after many days, they came nigh to the west border of Dorioth, somewhat south of Teiglin, for they intended to pass the fences of the little land of Thingol beyond Sirion, and so come to the guarded bridge near the inflowing of Esgaldwin. There a while they halted, and they laid Nienor on a couch of grass, and she closed her eyes, as she had not yet done, and it seemed that she slept. Then the elves rested also, and for very weariness were unheedful. Thus they were assailed at unawares by a band of orc hunters, such as now roamed much in that region, as nigh to the fences of Dorioth as they dared to go. In the midst of the affray, suddenly Nienor leapt up from her couch, as one waking out of sleep to an alarm by night, and with a cry she sped away into the forest. Then the orcs turned and gave chase, and the elves after them. But a strange change came upon Nienor, and now she outran them all, flying like a deer among the trees, with her hair streaming in the wind of her speed. The orcs, indeed, Mablung and his companions swiftly overtook, and they slew them one and all, and hastened on. But by then Nienor had passed away like a wraith, and neither sight nor slot of her could they find, though they hunted for many days. Then at last Mablung returned to Dorioth, bowed with grief and with shame.
"Choose you a new master of your hunters, lord," he said to the king, "for I am dishonored."
But Melion said,
It is not so, Mablung. You did all that you could, and none other among the king's servants would have done so much. But by ill chance you were matched against a power too great for you, too great indeed for all that now dwell in Middle-earth.
I sent you to win tidings, and that you have done, said Thingol. It is no fault of yours that those whom the tidings touch nearest are now beyond hearing. Grievous, indeed, is this end of all Hurin's kin, but it lies not at your door.
For not only was Nienor now run witless into the wild, but Morwen also was lost. Neither then nor after did any certain news of her fate come to Dorioth or to Dor Loman. Nonetheless, Mablung would not rest, and with a small company he went out into the wild, and for 3 years wandered far, from arid Wethryn even to the mouths of Sirion, seeking for sign or tidings of the lost. Nienor in Brethil. But as for Nienor, she ran on into the wood, hearing the shouts of pursuit come behind, and her clothing she tore off, casting away her garments as she fled, until she went naked. And all that day still she ran, as a beast that is hunted to heart-bursting, and dare not stay or draw breath. But at evening, suddenly her madness passed. She stood still a moment as in wonder, and then, in a swoon of utter weariness, she fell as one stricken, down into a deep brake of fern. And there, amid the old bracken and the swift fronds of spring, she lay and slept, heedless of all. In the morning she woke, and rejoiced in the light as one first called to life, and all things that she saw seemed to her new and strange, and she had no names for them. For behind her lay only an empty darkness, through which came no memory of anything she had ever known, nor any echo of any word. A shadow of fear only she remembered, and so she was wary, and sought ever for hidings. She would climb into trees, or slip into thickets, swift as squirrel or fox, if any sound or shadow frightened her, and thence she would peer long through the leaves before she went on again. Thus, going forward in the way she first ran, she came to the river Teiglin, and stayed her thirst, but no food she found, nor knew how to seek it, and she was famished and cold. And since the trees across the water seemed closer and darker, as indeed they were, being the eaves of Brethil Forest, she crossed over at last, and came to a green mound, and there cast herself down, for she was spent, and it seemed to her that the darkness that lay behind her was overtaking her again, and the sun going dark. But indeed it was a black storm that came up out of the south, laden with lightning and great rain, and she lay there, cowering in terror of the thunder, and the dark rain smote her nakedness. Now it chanced that some of the woodmen of Brethil came by in that hour from a foray against orcs, hastening over the crossings of Teiglin to a shelter that was near. And there came a great flash of lightning, so that the Howthen Eleth was lit as with a white flame. Then Turambar, who led the men, started back and covered his eyes and trembled. For it seemed that he saw the wraith of a slain maiden that lay upon the grave of Finduilas. But one of the men ran to the mound and called to him,
"Hither, lord! Here is a young woman lying, and she lives!"
And Turambar, coming, lifted her, and the water dripped from her drenched hair, but she closed her eyes and quivered and strove no more. Then, marveling that she lay thus naked, Turambar cast his cloak about her and bore her away to the hunter's lodge in the woods. There they lit a fire and wrapped coverlets about her, and she opened her eyes and looked upon them. And when her glance fell on Turambar, a light came in her face, and she put out a hand towards him, for it seemed to her that she had found at last something that she had sought in the darkness, and she was comforted. But Turambar took her hand and smiled and said,
"Now, lady, will you not tell us your name and your kin and what evil has befallen you?"
Then she shook her head and said nothing, but began to weep, and they troubled her no more until she had eaten hungrily of what food they could give her. And when she had eaten, she sighed and laid her hand again in Turambar's, and he said, "With us you are safe. Here you may rest this night, and in the morning we will lead you to our homes up in the high forest. But we would know your name and your kin, so that we may find them, maybe, and bring them news of you. Will you not tell us?" But again she made no answer, and wept.
"Do not be troubled," said Turambar. "Maybe the tale is too sad yet to tell. But I will give you a name, and call you Niniel,
made of tears. And at that name she looked up, and she shook her head, but said, Niniel. And that was the first word that she spoke after her darkness, and it was her name among the woodmen ever after. In the morning they bore Niniel towards Ethelbrondir, and the road went steeply upward towards Amon Obel, until it came to a place where it must cross the tumbling stream of Celebros. There a bridge of wood had been built, and below it the stream went over a lip of worn stone, and fell down by many foaming steps into a rocky bowl far below, and all the air was filled with spray like rain. There was a wide greensward at the head of the falls, and birches grew about it. But over the bridge there was a wide view towards the ravines of Taglin, some 2 miles to the west. There the air was cool, and there wayfarers in summer would rest and drink of the cold water. Dimrost, the rainy stair, those falls were called. But after that day, Nengirith, the shuddering water. For Tarombar and his men halted there. But as soon as Niniel came to that place, she grew cold and shivered, and they could not warm her or comfort her. Note 24. One might suppose that it was only when all was over, and Turin and Nienor dead, that her shuddering fit was recalled, and its meaning seen, and Dimrost renamed Nengirith. But in the legend, Nengirith is used as the name throughout. End of note. Therefore they hastened on their way. But before they came to Ethelbrondir, Niniel was already wandering in a fever. Long she lay in her sickness, and Brondir used all his skill in her healing, and the wives of the woodmen watched over her by night and by day. But only when Tarombar stayed near her would she lie at peace, or sleep without moaning, and this thing all marked that watched her. Throughout all her fever, though often she was much troubled, she murmured never a word in any tongue of elves or of men. And when health slowly returned to her, and she walked and began to eat again, then, as with a child, the women of Brethil must teach her to speak, word by word. But in this learning she was quick, and took great delight, as one that finds again treasures great and small that were mislaid. And when at length she had learned enough to speak with her friends, she would say, What is the name of this thing? For in my darkness I lost it. And when she was able to go about again, she would seek the house of Brondir, for she was most eager to learn the names of all living things, and he knew much of such matters. And they would walk together in the gardens and the glades. Then Brondir grew to love her, and when she grew strong, she would lend him an arm for his lameness, and she called him her brother. But to Tarombar her heart was given, and only at his coming would she smile, and only when he spoke gaily would she laugh. One evening of the golden autumn they sat together, and the sun set the hillside and the houses of Ethelbrondir aglow, and there was a deep quiet. Then Niniel said to him, Of all things I have now asked the name, save you. What are you called? Tarombar, he answered. Then she paused, as if listening for some echo, but she said, And what does that say? Or is it just the name for you alone? It means, said he, master of the dark shadow. For I also, Niniel, had my darkness, in which dear things were lost. But now I have overcome it, I deem. And did you also flee from it, running until you came to these fair woods? She said. And when did you escape, Tarombar? Yes, he answered. I fled for many years, and I escaped when you did so. For it was dark when you came, Niniel. But ever since, it has been light, and it seems to me that what I long sought in vain has come to me. And as he went back to his house in the twilight, he said to himself, How then, Eleth, from the green mound she came? Is that a sign, and how shall I read it? Now that golden year waned and passed to a gentle winter, and there came another bright year. There was peace in Brethil, and the woodmen held themselves quiet, and went not abroad, and they heard no tidings of the lands that lay about them. For the orcs that at that time came southward to the dark reign of Glaurung, or were sent to spy on the borders of Dorioth, shunned the crossings of Taglin, and passed westward, far beyond the river. And now Niniel was fully healed, and was grown fair and strong. And Tarombar restrained himself no longer, but asked her in marriage. Then Niniel was glad. But when Brondir learned of it, his heart was sick within him, and he said to her, "Be not in haste. Think me not unkindly, if I counsel you to wait." "Nothing that you do is done unkindly," she said. "But why then do you give me such counsel, wise brother?"
"Wise brother," he answered. "Lame brother. Rather, unloved and unlovely. And I scarce know why. Yet there lies a shadow on this man, and I am afraid."
"There was a shadow," said Niniel, "for so he told me. But he has escaped from it, even as I. And is he not worthy of love? Though he now holds himself at peace, was he not once the greatest captain, from whom all our enemies would flee if they saw him?"
"Who told you this?" said Brondir.
"It was Dorlos," she said. "Does he not speak truth?"
"Truth indeed," said Brondir.
But he was ill-pleased, for Dorlos was chief of that party that wished for war on the orcs. And yet he sought still for reasons to delay Niniel, and he said therefore,
"The truth, but not the whole truth. For he was the captain of Nargothrond, and came before out of the north, and was, it is said, son of Húrin of Dorloman, of the warlike house of Hador."
And Brondir, seeing the shadow that passed over her face at that name, misread her, and said more.
"Indeed, Niniel, well may you think that such a one is likely ere long to go back to war, far from this land, maybe. And if so, how will you endure it? Have a care, for I forebode that if Turambar goes again to battle, then not he, but the shadow, shall have the mastery."
"Ill would I endure it," she answered, "but unwedded no better than wedded, and a wife, maybe, would better restrain him and hold off the shadow." Nonetheless, she was troubled by the words of Brondir, and she bade Turambar wait yet a while, and he wondered and was downcast. But when he learned from Niniel that Brondir had counseled her to wait, he was ill-pleased. But when the next spring came, he said to Niniel, "Time passes. We have waited, and now I will wait no longer. Do as your heart bids you, Niniel, most dear. But see, this is the choice before me.
I will go back now to war in the wild, or I will wed you and go never to war again, save only to defend you if some evil assails our home."
Then she was glad indeed, and she plighted her troth, and at the midsummer they were wedded, and the woodmen made a great feast, and they gave them a fair house which they had built for them upon Amon Obo. There they dwelt in happiness, but Brondir was troubled, and the shadow on his heart grew deeper. The Coming of Glaurung. Now the power and malice of Glaurung grew apace, and he waxed fat, and he gathered orcs to him, and ruled as a dragon king, and all the realm of Nargothrond that had been was laid under him. And before this year ended, the third of Turambar's dwelling among the woodmen, he began to assail their land, which for a while had had peace. For indeed it was well known to Glaurung and to his master that in Brethil there abode still a remnant of free men, the last of the three houses to defy the power of the north. And this they would not brook, for it was the purpose of Morgoth to subdue all Beleriand and to search out its every corner, so that none in any hole or hiding might live that were not thrall to him. Thus, whether Glaurung guessed where Turin was hidden, or whether, as some hold, he had indeed for that time escaped from the eye of evil that pursued him, is of little matter. For in the end, the counsels of Brondir must prove vain, and at the last, two choices only could there be for Turambar: to sit deedless until he was found, driven forth like a rat, or to go forth soon to battle and be revealed. But when tidings of the coming of the orcs were first brought to Efel Brondir, he did not go forth, and yielded to the prayers of Niniel. For she said, "Our homes are not yet assailed, as your word was. It is said that the orcs are not many, and Dorlos has told me that before you came such affrays were not seldom, and the woodmen held them off." But the woodmen were worsted, for these orcs were of a fell breed, fierce and cunning. And they came indeed with a purpose to invade the forest of Brethil, not as before passing through its eaves on other errands or hunting in small bands. Therefore Dorlos and his men were driven back with loss, and the orcs came over Teiglin and roamed far into the woods. And Dorlos came to Torombar and showed his wounds, and he said,
"Sea Lord, now is the time of our need come upon us after a false peace, even as I foreboded. Did you not ask to be counted one of our people, and no stranger? Is this peril not yours also? For our homes will not remain hidden if the orcs come further into our land."
Therefore Turambar arose, and took up again his sword, Girthong, and he went to battle. And when the woodmen learned this, they were greatly heartened, and they gathered to him, till he had a force of many hundreds. Then they hunted through the forest, and slew all the orcs that crept there, and hung them on the trees near the crossings of Taglin. And when a new host came against them, they trapped it. And being surprised both by the numbers of the woodmen and by the terror of the black sword that had returned, the orcs were routed and slain in great number. Then the woodmen made great pyres and burned the bodies of the soldiers of Morgoth in heaps, and the smoke of their vengeance rose black into heaven, and the wind bore it away westward. But few living went back to Nargothrond with these tidings. Then Glaurung was wrathful indeed, but for a while he lay still and pondered what he had heard. Thus the winter passed in peace, and men said, "Great is the black sword of Brethil, for all our enemies are overcome." And Niniel was comforted, and she rejoiced in the renown of Turambar. But he said in thought, and he said in his heart, "The die is cast. Now comes the test in which my boast shall be made good, or fail utterly. I will flee no more. Turambar indeed I will be, and by my own will and prowess I will surmount my doom, or fall. But falling or riding, Glaurung at least I will slay." Nonetheless he was unquiet, and he sent out men of daring as scouts far afield. For indeed, though no word was said, he now ordered things as he would, as if he were lord of Brethil, and no man heeded Brondir. Spring came hopefully, and men sang at their work. But in that spring Niniel conceived, and she became pale and wan, and all her happiness was dimmed. And soon there came strange tidings from the men that had gone abroad beyond Taglin, that there was a great burning far out in the woods of the plain towards Nargothrond, and men wondered what it might be. Before long there came more reports, that the fires drew ever northward, and that indeed Glaurung himself made them, for he had left Nargothrond and was abroad again on some errand. Then the more foolish or more hopeful said, "His army is destroyed, and now at last he sees wisdom and is going back whence he came." And others said, "Let us hope that he will pass us by." But Turambar had no such hope, and knew that Glaurung was coming to seek him. Therefore, though he masked his mind because of Niniel, he pondered ever by day and by night what counsel he should take. And spring turned towards summer. A day came when two men returned to Ethel Brondir in terror, for they had seen the great worm himself. "In truth, Lord," they said to Turambar, "he draws now near to Taglin and turns not aside. He lay in the midst of a great burning, and the trees smoked about him. The stench of him is scarce to be endured. And all the long leagues back to Nargothrond, his foul swath lies, we deem, in a line that swerves not, but points straight to us. What is to be done?"
"Little," said Turambar, "but to that little I have already given thought. The tidings you bring give me hope rather than dread. For if indeed he goes straight, as you say, and will not swerve, then I have some counsel for hardy hearts." The men wondered, for he said no more at that time, but they took heart from his steadfast bearing. Note 25. If Glaurung's intention had indeed been to return to Angband, it might be thought that he would have taken the old road to the crossings of Taglin, a course not greatly different from that which brought him to Kabed en Arras. Perhaps the assumption was that he would return to Angband by the way that he came south to Nargothrond, going up Narog to Ivrin. Compare also Mablung's words, page 143. "I watched the coming forth of Glaurung, and I thought that he was returning to his master, but he turned towards Brethil." When Turambar spoke of his hope that Glaurung would go straight and not swerve, he meant that if the dragon went up along Taglin to the crossings, he would be able to enter Brethil without having to pass over the gorge, where he would be vulnerable. See his words to the men at Ningirith, page 130. End of note. Now the river Taglin ran in this manner. It flowed down from arid Wethrin, swift as Narog, but at first between low shores, until after the crossings, gathering power from other streams, it clove away through the feet of the highlands upon which stood the forest of Brethil. Thereafter, it ran in deep ravines, whose great sides were like walls of rock. But pent at the bottom, the waters flowed with great force and noise. And right in the path of Glaurung, there lay now one of these gorges, by no means the deepest, but the narrowest, just north of the inflow of Celebros. Therefore Tarambar sent out 3 hardy men to keep watch from the brink on the movements of the dragon. But he himself would ride to the high fall of Nengirith, where news could find him swiftly, and whence he himself could look far across the lands. But first he gathered the woodmen together in Ethelbrondir, and spoke to them, saying,
"Men of Brethil, a deadly peril has come upon us, which only great hardihood shall turn aside. But in this matter numbers will avail little. We must use cunning, and hope for good fortune. If we went up against the dragon with all our strength, as against an army of orcs, we should but offer ourselves all to death, and so leave our wives and kin defenseless. Therefore I say that you should stay here, and prepare for flight. For if Glaurung comes, then you must abandon this place, and scatter far and wide, and so may some escape and live. For certainly if he can, he will come to our stronghold and dwelling, and he will destroy it, and all that he espies. But afterwards he will not abide here. In Nargothrond lies all his treasure, and there are the deep halls in which he can lie safe and grow."
Then the men were dismayed, and were utterly downcast, for they trusted in Tarambar, and had looked for more hopeful words. But he said,
"Nay, that is the worst, and it shall not come to pass if my counsel and fortune is good. For I do not believe that this dragon is unconquerable, though he grows greater in strength and malice with the years. I know somewhat of him. His power is rather in the evil spirit that dwells within him than in the might of his body, great though that be. For hear now this tale that I was told by some that fought in the year of the Nirnaeth. When I and most that hear me were children, in that field the dwarves withstood him, and Azaghal of Belagost pricked him so deep that he fled back to Angband. But here is a thorn sharper and longer than the knife of Azaghal." And Tarambar swept Gurthong from its sheath, and stabbed with it up above his head, and it seemed to those that looked on that a flame leapt from Tarambar's hand many feet into the air. Then they gave a great cry.
"The Black Thorn of Brethil!"
"The Black Thorn of Brethil," said Tarambar. "Well may he fear it. For know this, it is the doom of this dragon, and all his brood, it is said, that how great soever be his armor of horn, harder than iron, below he must go with the belly of a snake. Therefore, men of Brethil, I go now to seek the belly of Glaurung, by what means I may. Who will come with me? I need but a few with strong arms and stronger hearts."
Then Dorlos stood forth and said,
"I will go with you, lord, for I would ever go forward rather than wait for a foe."
But no others were so swift to the call, for the dread of Glaurung lay on them, and the tale of the scouts that had seen him had gone about and grown in the telling. Then Dorlos cried out,
"Hearken, men of Brethil! It is now well seen that for the evil of our times the counsels of Brondir were vain. There is no escape by hiding. Will none of you take the place of the son of Handir, that the house of Haleth be not put to shame?"
Thus Brondir, who sat indeed in the high seat of the lord of the assembly, but unheeded, was scorned, and he was bitter in his heart, for Tarambar did not rebuke Dorlos. But one Hunthor, Brondir's kinsman, arose and said,
"You do evilly, Dorlos, to speak thus to the shame of your lord, whose limbs by ill hazard cannot do as his heart would. Beware, lest the contrary be seen in you at some turn. And how can it be said that his counsels were vain, when they were never taken? You, his liege, have ever set them at naught. I say to you that Glaurung comes now to us, as to Nargothrond before, because our deeds have betrayed us, as he feared. But since this woe is now come, with your leave, son of Handir, I will go on behalf of Haleth's house."
Then Tarambar said,
3 is enough. You twain will I take. But, lord, I do not scorn you. See, we must go in great haste, and our task will need strong limbs. I deem that your place is with your people, for you are wise and are a healer, and it may be that there will be great need of wisdom and healing ere long. But these words, though fair spoken, did but embitter Brondir the more, and he said to Hunthor,
"Go then, but not with my leave, for a shadow lies on this man, and it will lead you to evil."
Now Tarambar was in haste to go, but when he came to Niniel to bid her farewell, she clung to him, weeping grievously.
"Go not forth, Tarambar, I beg," she said. Challenge not the shadow that you have fled from. Nay, nay, flee still and take me with you, far away.
Anyhow, most dear, he answered, we cannot flee further, you and I. We are hemmed in this land. And even should I go, deserting the people that befriended us, I could but take you forth into the houseless wild, to your death, and the death of our child. 100 leagues lie between us and any land that is yet beyond the reach of the shadow. But take heart, Nennio, for I say to you, neither you nor I shall be slain by this dragon, nor by any foe of the north. Then Nennio ceased to weep, and fell silent, but her kiss was cold as they parted. Then Tarambar, with Dorlos and Hunthor, went away hotfoot to Nengirith, and when they came there the sun was westering, and shadows were long, and the last 2 of the scouts were there awaiting them. You come not too soon, lord, said they, for the dragon has come on, and already when we left he had reached the brink of Taglin, and glared across the water. He moves ever by night, and we may look then for some stroke before tomorrow's dawn. Tarambar looked out over the falls of Celebros, and saw the sun going down to its setting, and black spires of smoke rising by the borders of the river. There is no time to lose, he said. Yet these tidings are good, for my fear was that he would seek about, and if he passed northward, and came to the crossings, and so to the old road in the lowland, then hope would be dead. But now some fury of pride and malice drives him headlong. But even as he spoke, he wondered and mused in his mind. Or can it be that one so evil and fell shuns the crossings, even as the orcs? Houth and Eleth, does Finduilas lie still between me and my doom? Then he turned to his companions and said, This task now lies before us. We must wait yet a little, for too soon in this case we're as ill as too late. When dusk falls, we must creep down with all stealth to Taglin. But beware, for the ears of Glaurung are as keen as his eyes, and they are deadly. If we reach the river unmarked, we must climb then down into the ravine and cross the water, and so come in the path that he will take when he stirs. But how can he come forward so? Said Dorlos. Lithe he may be, but he is a great dragon, and how shall he climb down the one cliff and up the other, when part must again be climbing before the hinder is yet descended? And if he can so, what will it avail us to be in the wild water below? Maybe he can so, answered Tarambar, and indeed, if he does, it will go ill with us. But it is my hope from what we learn of him, and from the place where he now lies, that his purpose is otherwise. He is come to the brink of Kabid and Arras, over which, as you tell, a deer once leaped from the huntsman of Holoth. So great is he now, that I think he will seek to cast himself across there. That is all our hope, and we must trust to it. Dorlos' heart sank at these words, for he knew better than any all the land of Brethil, and Kabid en Arras was a grim place indeed. On the east side was a sheer cliff of some 40 feet, bare but tree-grown at the crown. On the other side was a bank somewhat less sheer and less high, shrouded with hanging trees and bushes. But between them the water ran fiercely among rocks, and though a man bold and sure-footed might ford it by day, it was perilous to dare it at night. But this was the counsel of Tarambar, and it was useless to gainsay him. They set out therefore at dusk, and they did not go straight towards the dragon, but took first the path to the crossings. Then before they came so far, they turned southward by a narrow track, and passed into the twilight of the woods above Taglin. Note 26. I have found no map to illustrate my father's conception of the lie of the land in detail, but this sketch seems at least to fit the references in the narrative. The map depicts the crossings of Taglin over the ravines of Taglin at the road to Nargothrond, and an arrow leads to Nengirith at the river Celebros toward Amon Obel. End of note. And as they drew near to Kabid en Arras, step by step, halting often to listen, the reek of burning came to them, and a stench that sickened them. But all was deadly still, and there was no stir of air. The first stars glimmered in the east behind them, and faint spires of smoke rose straight and unwavering against the last light in the west. Now, when Tarambar was gone, Nennio stood silent as stone, but Brandir came to her and said, Nennio, fear not the worst, until you must. But did I not counsel you to wait?
You did so, she answered.
Yet how would that profit me now? For love may abide and suffer unwedded. That I know, said Brandir.
yet wedding is not for nothing.
I am 2 months gone with his child, said Ninio, but it does not seem to me that my fear of loss is the more heavy to bear.
I understand you not. Nor I myself, said he, and yet I am afraid.
What a comforter are you, she cried. But Bronn, dear friend, wedded or unwedded, mother or maid, my dread is beyond enduring. The Master of Doom is gone to challenge his doom far hence, and how shall I stay here and wait for the slow coming of tidings, good or ill? This night, it may be, he will meet with the dragon, and how shall I stand or sit or pass the dreadful hours?
I know not, said he, but somehow the hours must pass, for you and for the wives of those that went with him.
Let them do as their hearts bid, she cried, but for me, I shall go. The miles shall not lie between me and my lord's peril. I will go to meet the tidings.
Then Brondir's dread grew black at her words, and he cried, That you shall not do, if I may hinder it, for thus will you endanger all counsel. The miles that lie between may give time for escape, if ill befall.
If ill befall, I shall not wish to escape, she said. And now your wisdom is vain, and you shall not hinder me.
And she stood forth before the people that were still gathered in the open place of the Efel, and she cried,
Men of Brethil, I will not wait here. If my lord fails, then all hope is false. Your land and woods shall be burned utterly, and all your houses laid in ashes, and none shall escape.
Therefore, why tarry here? Now I go to meet the tidings, and whatever doom may send. Let all those of like mind come with me.
Then many were willing to go with her, the wives of Dorlos and Hunthor, because those whom they loved were gone with Turambar. Others for pity of Niniel and desire to befriend her, and many more that were lured by the very rumor of the dragon in their hardihood or their folly, knowing little of evil, thinking to see strange and glorious deeds. For indeed so great in their minds had the Black Sword become that few could believe that even Glaurung could conquer him. Therefore they set forth soon, in haste, a great company, towards a peril that they did not understand. And going with little rest, they came wearily at last, just at nightfall, to Nengirith, but a little while after Turambar had departed. But night is a cold counselor, and many were now amazed at their own rashness. And when they heard from the scouts that remained there how near Glaurung was come, and the desperate purpose of Turambar, their hearts were chilled, and they dared go no further. Some looked out towards Kabid and Arras with anxious eyes, but nothing could they see, and nothing hear, save the cold voice of the falls. And Niniel sat apart, and a great shuddering seized her. When Niniel and her company had gone, Brondir said to those that remained,
Behold how I am scorned, and all my counsel disdained. Let Turambar be your lord in name, since already he has taken all my authority. For here I renounce both lordship and people. Let none seek of me ever again either counsel or healing.
And he broke his staff. To himself, he thought, Now nothing is left to me, save only my love of Niniel. Therefore, where she goes, in wisdom or folly, I must go. In this dark hour, nothing can be foreseen, but it may well chance that even I could ward off some evil from her, if I were near. He girt himself, therefore, with a short sword, as seldom before, and took his crutch, and went with what speed he might out of the gate of the Efel, limping after the others down the long path to the west march of Brethil. The Death of Glaurung. At last, even as full night closed over the land, Turambar and his companions came to Kabid and Arras, and they were glad of the great noise of the water, for though it promised peril below, it covered all other sounds. Then Dorlos led them a little aside, southwards, and they climbed down by a cleft to the cliff foot. But there his heart quailed, for many rocks and great stones lay in the river, and the water ran wild about them, grinding its teeth.
This is a sure way to death, said Dorlos. It is the only way, to death or to life, said Turambar, and delay will not make it seem more hopeful. Therefore follow me.
And he went on before them, and by skill and hardihood, or by fate, he came across, and in the deep dark he turned to see who came after. A dark form stood beside him.
Dorlos, he said.
No, it is I, said Hunthor.
Dorlos failed at the crossing, for a man may love war and yet dread many things. He sits shivering on the shore, I guess, and may shame take him for his words to my kinsmen.
Now Turambar and Hunthor rested a little, but soon the night chilled them, for they were both drenched with water, and they began to seek a way along the stream northwards towards the lodgment of Glaurung. There the chasm grew darker and narrower, and as they felt their way forward, they could see a flicker above them as of smoldering fire, and they heard the snarling of the great worm in his watchful sleep. Then they groped for a way up to come nigh under the brink, for in that lay all their hope to come at their enemy beneath his guard. But so foul now was the reek that their heads were dizzy, and they slipped as they clambered and clung to the tree stems and retched, forgetting in their misery all fear save the dread of falling into the teeth of Taglin. Then Turambar said to Hunthor, "We spend our waning strength to no avail, for till we be sure where the dragon will pass, it is vain to climb." "But when we know," said Hunthor, "then there will be no time to seek a way up out of the chasm." "Truly," said Turambar, "but where all lies on chance, to chance we must trust." They halted, therefore, and waited, and out of the dark ravine they watched a white star far above creep across the faint strip of sky. And then slowly, Turambar sank into a dream in which all his will was given to clinging, though a black tide sucked and gnawed at his limbs. Suddenly there was a great noise, and the walls of the chasm quivered and echoed. Turambar roused himself and said to Hunthor, "He stirs! The hour is upon us! Strike deep, for two must strike now for three!" And with that, Glaurung began his assault upon Brethil, and all passed much as Turambar had hoped. For now the dragon crawled with slow weight to the edge of the cliff, and he did not turn aside, but made ready to spring over the chasm with his great forelegs and then draw his bulk after. Terror came with him, for he did not begin his passage right above, but a little to the northward, and the watchers from beneath could see the huge shadow of his head against the stars. And his jaws gaped, and he had seven tongues of fire. Then he sent forth a blast, so that all the ravine was filled with a red light and black shadows flying among the rocks. But the trees before him withered and went up in smoke, and stones crashed down into the river. And thereupon he hurled himself forward and grappled the further cliff with his mighty claws and began to heave himself across. Now there was need to be bold and swift, for though Turambar and Hunthor had escaped the blast, since they were not standing right in Glaurung's path, they yet had to come at him before he passed over, or all their hope failed. Heedless of peril, Turambar clambered along the water edge to come beneath him, but there so deadly was the heat and the stench that he tottered and would have fallen if Hunthor, following stoutly behind, had not seized his arm and steadied him. "Great heart," said Turambar, "happy was the choice that took you for a helper." But even as he spoke, a great stone hurtled from above and smote Hunthor on the head, and he fell into the water, and so ended, not the least valiant of the house of Haleth. Then Turambar cried, "Alas, it is ill to walk in my shadow. Why did I seek aid? For now you are alone, O Master of Doom, as you should have known it must be. Now conquer alone." Then he summoned to him all his will and all his hatred of the dragon and his master, and it seemed that suddenly he found a strength of heart and of body that he had not known before, and he climbed the cliff from stone to stone and root to root until he seized at last a slender tree that grew a little beneath the lip of the chasm, and though its top was blasted, it held still fast by its roots. And even as he steadied himself in a fork of its boughs, the midmost parts of the dragon came above him and swayed down with their weight almost upon his head ere Glaurung could heave them up. Pale and wrinkled was their underside, and all dank with a gray slime to which clung all manner of dropping filth, and it stank of death. Then Turambar drew the black sword of Beleg and stabbed upwards with all the might of his arm and of his hate, and the deadly blade, long and greedy, went into the belly, even to its hilts. Then Glaurung, feeling his death-pang, gave forth a scream, whereat all the woods were shaken, and the watchers at Nengirith were aghast. Turambar reeled as from a blow, and slipped down, and his sword was torn from his grasp, and clave to the belly of the dragon. For Glaurung, in a great spasm, bent up all his shuddering bulk, and hurled it over the ravine. And there upon the further shore he writhed, screaming, lashing, and coiling himself in his agony, until he had broken a great space all about him, and lay there at last in a smoke and a ruin, and was still. Now Turambar clung to the roots of the tree, stunned and well-nigh overcome, but he strove against himself, and drove himself on, and half sliding and half climbing, he came down to the river and dared again the perilous crossing, crawling now on hands and feet, clinging, blinded with spray, until he came over at last and climbed wearily up by the cleft by which they had descended. Thus he came at length to the place of the dying dragon, and he looked on his stricken enemy without pity and was glad. There now Glaurung lay, with jaws agape, but all his fires were burned out, and his evil eyes were closed. He was stretched out in his length, and had rolled upon one side, and the hilts of Gurthong stood in his belly. Then the heart of Tarambar rose high within him, and though the dragon still breathed, he would recover his sword, which, if he prized it before, was now worth to him all the treasure of Nargothrond. True proved the words spoken at its forging, that nothing, great or small, should live that once it had bitten. Therefore, going up to his foe, he set foot upon his belly, and seizing the hilts of Gurthong, he put forth his strength to withdraw it, and he cried, in mockery of Glaurung's words at Nargothrond, "Hail, worm of Morgoth! Well met again! Die now, and the darkness have thee! Thus is Turin, son of Hurin, avenged!" Then he wrenched out the sword, and even as he did so, a spout of black blood followed it, and fell upon his hand, and his flesh was burned by the venom, so that he cried aloud at the pain. Thereat, Glaurung stirred, and opened his baleful eyes, and looked upon Tarambar with such malice that it seemed to him that he was smitten by an arrow. And for that, and for the anguish of his hand, he fell in a swoon, and lay as one dead beside the dragon, and his sword was beneath him. Now the screams of Glaurung came to the people at Nangirith, and they were filled with terror. And when the watchers beheld from afar the great breaking and burning that the dragon made in his throes, they believed that he was trampling and destroying those that had assailed him. Then indeed they wished the miles longer that lay between them. But they dared not leave the high place where they were gathered, for they remembered the words of Tarambar, that if Glaurung conquered, he would go first to Ethelbrondir. Therefore they watched in fear for any sign of his movement, but none were so hardy as to go down and seek for tidings in the place of the battle. And Niniel sat and did not move, save that she shuddered and could not still her limbs. For when she heard the voice of Glaurung, her heart died within her, and she felt her darkness creeping upon her again. Thus Brondir found her, for he came at last to the bridge over Celebros, slow and weary. All the long way alone he had limped on his crutch, and it was 5 leagues at the least from his home. Fear for Niniel had driven him on, and now the tidings that he learned were no worse than he had dreaded. "The dragon has crossed the river," men told him, "and the black sword is surely dead, and those that went with him." Then Brondir stood by Niniel and guessed her misery, and he yearned to her, but he thought nonetheless, "The black sword is dead, and Niniel lives," and he shuddered, for suddenly it seemed cold by the waters of Nangirith, and he cast his cloak about Niniel, but he found no words to say, and she did not speak. Time passed, and still Brondir stood silent beside her, peering into the night and listening. But he could see nothing, and could hear no sound but the falling of the waters of Nengirith, and he thought, "Now surely Glaurung is gone, and has passed into Brethil." But he pitied his people no more, fools that had flouted his counsel, and had scorned him. "Let the dragon go to Amon Obel, and there will be time then to escape, to lead Niniel away," whither he scarce knew, for he had never journeyed beyond Brethil. At last he bent down and touched Niniel on the arm, and said to her, "Time passes, Niniel. Come, it is time to go. If you will let me, I will lead you." Then silently she arose and took his hand, and they passed over the bridge and went down the path that led to the crossings of Tiglin. But those that saw them moving as shadows in the dark knew not who they were and cared not. And when they had gone some little way through the silent trees, the moon rose beyond Amon Obel, and the glades of the forest were filled with a gray light. Then Niniel halted and said to Brondir, "Is this the way?" And he answered, "What is the way? For all our hope in Brethel is ended. We have no way, save to escape the dragon and flee far from him while there is yet time." Niniel looked at him in wonder and said, "Did you not offer to lead me to him? Or would you deceive me? The black sword was my beloved and my husband, and only to find him do I go. What else could you think? Now do as you will, but I must hasten. And even as Brondir stood a moment amazed, she sped from him, and he called after her, crying,
Wait, Niniel! Go not alone! You know not what you will find! I will come with you!
But she paid no heed to him, and went now as though her blood burned her, which before had been cold. And though he followed as he could, she passed soon out of his sight. Then he cursed his fate and his weakness, but he would not turn back. Now the moon rose white in the sky, and was near the full, and as Niniel came down from the upland towards the land near the river, it seemed to her that she remembered it, and feared it, for she was come to the crossings of Teiglin, and Halth and Eleth stood there before her, pale in the moonlight, with a black shadow cast athwart it, and out of the mound came a great dread. Then she turned with a cry, and fled south along the river, and cast her cloak as she ran, as though casting off a darkness that clung to her. And beneath she was all clad in white, and she shone in the moon as she flitted among the trees. Thus Brondir, above on the hillside, saw her, and turned to cross her course, if he could, and finding by fortune the narrow path that Tarambar had used, for it left the more beaten road, and went steeply down southward to the river, he came at last close behind her again. But though he called, she did not heed, or did not hear, and soon once more she passed on ahead. And so they drew near to the woods, beside Cabed en Arras, and the place of the agony of Glaurung. The moon then was riding in the south, unclouded, and the light was cold and clear. Coming to the edge of the ruin that Glaurung had wrought, Niniel saw his body lying there, and his belly gray in the moonsheen. But beside him lay a man. Then, forgetting her fear, she ran on amid the smoldering wrack, and so came to Tarambar. He was fallen on his side, and his sword lay beneath him, but his face was wan as death in the white light. Then she threw herself down by him, weeping, and kissed him, and it seemed to her that he breathed faintly, but she thought it but a trickery of false hope, for he was cold, and did not move, nor did he answer her. And as she caressed him, she found that his hand was blackened, as if it had been scorched, and she washed it with her tears, and tearing a strip from her raiment, she bound it about. But still he did not move at her touch, and she kissed him again, and cried aloud,
Tarambar! Tarambar, come back! Hear me! Awake! For it is Niniel! The dragon is dead, dead, and I alone am here by you.
But he answered nothing. Her cry Brondir heard, for he had come to the edge of the ruin. But even as he stepped forward towards Niniel, he was halted and stood still. For at the cry of Niniel, Glaurung stirred for the last time, and a quiver ran through all his body, and he opened his baleful eyes a slit, and the moon gleamed in them, as gasping he spoke.
Hail, Nienor, daughter of Hurin. We meet again ere the end. I give thee joy that thou hast found thy brother at last. And now thou shalt know him, a stabber in the dark, treacherous to foes, faithless to friends, and a curse unto his kin, Turin, son of Hurin. But the worst of all his deeds thou shalt feel in thyself.
Then Nienor sat as one stunned, but Glaurung died, and with his death the veil of his malice fell from her, and all her memory grew clear before her, from day unto day. Neither did she forget any of those things that had befallen her since she lay on Halth and Eleth, and her whole body shook with horror and anguish. But Brondir, who had heard all, was stricken, and leaned against a tree. Then suddenly Nienor started to her feet, and stood pale as a wraith in the moon, and looked down on Turin, and cried,
Farewell, O twice beloved.
Arturin, Tarambar, Turun, Ambartanen. Master of doom, by doom mastered. O happy to be dead.
Then, distraught with woe and the horror that had overtaken her, she fled wildly from that place, and Brondir stumbled after her, crying,
Wait! Wait, Niniel!
One moment she paused, looking back with staring eyes.
Wait, she cried. Wait! That was ever your counsel. Would that I had heeded. But now it is too late, and now I will wait no more upon Middle-earth.
And she sped on before him. Note
27. The phrases fled wildly from that place and sped on before him suggest that there was some distance between the place where Turin lay beside Glaurung's corpse and the edge of the ravine. It may be that the dragon's death leap carried him some way beyond the further brink. End of note. Swiftly she came to the brink of Kabid en Aras, and there stood and looked on the loud water, crying,
"Water! Water! Take now Niniel Nienor, daughter of Hurin. Mourning! Mourning, daughter of Morwen! Take me, and bear me down to the sea!"
With that she cast herself over the brink, a flash of white swallowed in the dark chasm, a cry lost in the roaring of the river. The waters of Taglan flowed on, but Kabid en Aras was no more. Kabid Nyramarth, thereafter it was named by men, for no deer would ever leap there again, and all living things shunned it, and no man would walk upon its shore. Last of men to look down into its darkness was Brondir, son of Hondir, and he turned away in horror, for his heart quailed, and though he hated now his life, he could not there take the death that he desired. Note 28. Later in the narrative, page 145, Turin himself, before his death, called the place Kabid Nyramarth, and it may be supposed that it was from the tradition of his last words that the later name was derived. The apparent discrepancy that, although Brondir is said, both here and in the Silmarillion, to have been the last man to look on Kabid en Aras, Turin came there soon afterwards, and indeed the elves also, and all those who raised the mound over him, may perhaps be explained by taking the words of the Narn concerning Brondir in a narrow sense. He was the last man actually to look down into its darkness. It was indeed my father's intention to alter the narrative so that Turin slew himself not at Kabid en Aras, but on the mound of Finduilos by the crossings of Taeguin. But this never received written form. End of note. Then his thought turned to Turin Turambar, and he cried,
"Do I hate you, or do I pity you? But you are dead. I owe you no thanks, taker of all that I had or would have. But my people owe you a debt. It is fitting that from me they should learn it."
And so he began to limp back to Nengirith, avoiding the place of the dragon with a shudder. And as he climbed the steep path again, he came on a man that peered through the trees, and seeing him, drew back. But he had marked his face in a gleam of the sinking moon.
"Ha! Dorlos!" he cried. "What news can you tell? How came you off alive? And what of my kinsmen?"
"I know not," answered Dorlos sullenly.
"And that is strange," said Brondir.
"If you will know," said Dorlos,
"the Black Sword would have us ford the races of Taeguilin in the dark.
Is it strange that I could not?
I am a better man with an axe than some, but I am not goat-footed."
"So they went on without you, to come at the dragon," said Brondir.
"But how when he passed over? At the least you would stay near, and would see what befell."
But Dorlos made no answer, and stared only at Brondir with hatred in his eyes. Then Brondir understood, perceiving suddenly that this man had deserted his companions, and unmanned by shame, had then hidden in the woods.
"Shame on you, Dorlos," he said. "You are the begetter of our woes, egging on the Black Sword, bringing the dragon upon us, putting me to scorn, drawing Hunthor to his death, and then you flee to skulk in the woods."
And as he spoke, another thought entered his mind, and he said in great anger,
"Why did you not bring tidings? It was the least penance that you could do. Had you done so, the Lady Ninia would have had no need to seek them herself. She need never have seen the dragon. She might have lived. Dorlos, I hate you."
"Keep your hate," said Dorlos. "It is as feeble as all your counsels. But for me, the orcs would have come and hung you as a scarecrow in your own garden. Take the name Skulker to yourself."
And with that, being for his shame the readier to wrath, he aimed a blow at Brondir with his great fist, and so ended his life before the look of amazement left his eyes. For Brondir drew his sword and hewed him his death blow. Then for a moment he stood trembling, sickened by the blood, and casting down his sword, he turned and went on his way, bowed upon his crutch. As Brondir came to Nengirith, the pallid moon was gone down, and the night was fading.
Morning was opening in the east. The people that cowered there still by the bridge saw him come like a gray shadow in the dawn, and some called to him in wonder.
Where have you been? Have you seen her? For the Lady Niniel is gone.
Yes, she is gone, he said.
Gone, gone, never to return. But I am come to bring you tidings. Hear now, people of Breathill, and say if there was ever such a tale as the tale that I bear. The dragon is dead, but dead also is Turambar at his side. And those are good tidings. Yes, both are good indeed.
Then the people murmured, wondering at his speech, and some said that he was mad, but Brondir cried,
Hear me to the end! Niniel, too, is dead. Niniel the Fair, whom you loved, whom I loved dearest of all. She leaped from the brink of the deer's leap, and the teeth of Teiglin have taken her.
Note 29. It seems from this that the deer's leap was the original name of the place, and indeed the meaning of Cabed en Arras. End of note.
She is gone, hating the light of the day, for this she learned before she fled. Hurin's children were they both, sister and brother. The Mormagil he was called. Turambar he named himself, hiding his past. Turin, son of Hurin. Niniel we named her, not knowing her past. Nienor she was, daughter of Hurin. To Breathil they brought their dark doom's shadow. Here their doom has fallen, and of grief this land shall never again be free.
Call it not, Breathil, not the land of the Halathrim, but Sarch Nia Hin Hurin, grave of the children of Hurin. Then, though they did not understand yet how this evil had come to pass, the people wept as they stood, and some said,
A grave there is in Teiglin for Niniel the Beloved, a grave there shall be for Turambar, most valiant of men. Our deliverer shall not be left to lie under the sky. Let us go to him.
The Death of Turin. Now, even as Niniel fled away, Turin stirred, and it seemed to him that out of his deep darkness he heard her call to him far away. But as Glaurung died, the black swoon left him, and he breathed deep again, and sighed, and passed into a slumber of great weariness. But ere dawn it grew bitter cold, and he turned in his sleep, and the hilts of Girthong drove into his side, and suddenly he awoke. Night was going, and there was a breath of morning in the air, and he sprang to his feet, remembering his victory and the burning venom on his hand. He raised it up, and looked at it, and marveled, for it was bound about with a strip of white cloth, yet moist, and it was at ease. And he said to himself, Why should one tend me so, and yet leave me here to lie cold amid the rack and the dragon stench? What strange things have chanced. Then he called aloud, but there was no answer. All was black and drear about him, and there was a reek of death. He stooped and lifted his sword, and it was whole, and the light of its edges was undimmed.
Foul was the venom of Glaurung, he said. But you are stronger than I, Girthong. All blood will you drink. Yours is the victory. But come, I must go seek for aid. My body is weary, and there is a chill in my bones.
Then he turned his back upon Glaurung and left him to rot. But as he passed from that place, each step seemed more heavy, and he thought,
At Nengirith, maybe, I will find one of the scouts awaiting me. But would I were soon in my own house, and might feel the gentle hands of Ninio and the good skill of Brondir.
And so at last, walking wearily, leaning on Girthong, through the gray light of early day, he came to Nengirith. And even as men were setting forth to seek his dead body, he stood before the people. Then they gave back in terror, believing that it was his unquiet spirit, and the women wailed and covered their eyes. But he said,
Nay, do not weep, but be glad. See, do I not live? And have I not slain the dragon that you feared?
Then they turned upon Brondir and cried,
Fool with your false tales, saying that he lay dead? Did we not say that you were mad?
But Brondir was aghast and stared at Turin with fear in his eyes, and he could say nothing. But Turin said to him,
It was you then that were there and tended my hand?
I thank you.
But your skill is failing if you cannot tell swoon from death.
Then he turned to the people.
Speak not so to him, fools all of you. Which of you would have done better? At least he had the heart to come down to the place of battle while you sit wailing.
But no, son of Hondir, come. There is more that I would learn. Why are you here, and all this people, whom I left at the Ethel? If I may go into the peril of death for your sakes, may I not be obeyed when I am gone? And where is Niniel? At the least I may hope that you did not bring her hither, but left her where I bestowed her, in my house, with true men to guard it. And when no one answered him,
Come, say, where is Niniel? He cried. For her first I would see, and to her first will I tell the tale of the deeds in the night.
But they turned their faces from him, and Brondir said at last,
Niniel is not here.
That is well, then, he said. Then I will go to my home. Is there a horse to bear me, or a bier would be better? I faint with my labors.
Nay, nay, said Brondir in anguish.
Your house is empty.
Niniel is not there. She is dead.
But one of the women, the wife of Dorlos, who loved Brondir little, cried shrilly,
Pay no heed to him, lord, for he is crazed. He came crying that you were dead, and called it good tidings. But you live. Why then should his tale of Niniel be true, that she is dead and yet worse?
Then Turin strode towards Brondir.
So my death was good tidings, he cried.
Yes, ever you did begrudge her to me, that I knew.
Now she is dead, you say,
and yet worse.
What lie have you begotten in your malice, Clubfoot? Would you slay us then with foul words, since you can wield no other weapon?
Then anger drove pity from Brondir's heart, and he cried,
Crazed? Nay, crazed are you, black sword of black doom, and all this dotard people. I do not lie. Niniel is dead, dead, dead. Seek her in Taglin.
Then Turin stood still and cold.
How do you know? He said softly. How did you contrive it? I know because I saw her leap, answered Brondir. But the contriving was yours. She fled from you, Turin, son of Hurin, and in Cabed and Arras she cast herself, that she might never see you again. Niniel! Niniel? Nay, Nienor, daughter of Hurin!
Then Turin seized him and shook him, for in those words he heard the feet of his doom overtaking him. But in horror and fury his heart would not receive them, as a beast hurt to death that will wound ere it dies all that are near it.
Yes, I am Turin, son of Hurin, he cried. So long ago you guessed. But nothing do you know of Nienor, my sister. Nothing. She dwells in the hidden kingdom and is safe. It is a lie of your own vile mind to drive my wife witless, and now me. You limping, evil, would you dog us both to death?
But Brondir shook him off.
Touch me not, he said. Stay your raving. She that you name wife came to you and tended you, and you did not answer her call. But one answered for you. Glaurung the dragon, whom I deem bewitched you both to your doom. So he spoke before he ended. Nienor, daughter of Hurin, here is thy brother, treacherous to foes, faithless to friends, a curse unto his kin. Turin, son of Hurin.
Then suddenly a fey laughter seized on Brondir.
On their deathbed men will speak true, they say, he cackled. And even a dragon too, it seems. Turin, son of Hurin, a curse unto thy kin, and unto all that harbor thee.
Then Turin grasped Girthong, and a fell light was in his eyes.
And what shall be said of you, Clubfoot? He said slowly. Who told her secretly behind my back my right name? Who brought her to the malice of the dragon? Who stood by and let her die? Who came hither to publish this horror at the swiftest? Who would now gloat upon me? Do men speak true before death? Then speak it now, quickly.
Then Brondir, seeing his death in Turin's face, stood still and did not quail, though he had no weapon but his crutch, and he said,
All that has chanced is a long tale to tell, and I am weary of you. But you slander me, son of Hurin. Did Glaurung slander you? If you slay me, then all shall see that he did not. Yet I do not fear to die, for then I will go to seek Niniel, whom I loved, and perhaps I may find her again beyond the sea. Seek Niniel,
cried Turin.
Nay, Glaurung you shall find, and breed lies together. You shall sleep with a worm, your soul's mate, and rot in one darkness.
Then he lifted up Gurthong and hewed Brondir and smote him to death. But the people hid their eyes from that deed, and as he turned and went from Nengirith, they fled from him in terror. Then Turin went as one witless through the wild woods, now cursing Middle-earth and all the life of men, now calling upon Niniel. But when at last the madness of his grief left him, he sat a while and pondered all his deeds, and he heard himself crying, "She dwells in the hidden kingdom, and is safe." And he thought that now, though all his life was in ruin, he must go thither, for all the lies of Glaurung had ever led him astray. Therefore he arose and went to the crossings of Teiglin, and as he passed by Hald and Eleth, he cried,
"Bitterly have I paid, O Finduilas, that ever I gave heed to the dragon. Send me now counsel."
But even as he cried out, he saw 12 huntsmen well armed that came over the crossings, and they were elves. And as they drew near, he knew one, for it was Mablung, chief huntsman of Thingol. And Mablung hailed him, crying,
"Turin! Well met at last! I seek you, and glad I am to see you living, though the years have been heavy on you."
"Heavy," said Turin.
"Yes,
as the feet of Morgoth. But if you are glad to see me living, you are the last in Middle-earth."
"Why so?"
"Because you were held in honor among us," answered Mablung. "And though you have escaped many perils, I feared for you at the last. I watched the coming forth of Glaurung, and I thought that he had fulfilled his wicked purpose and was returning to his master. But he turned towards Brethil, and at the same time I learned from wanderers in the land that the black sword of Nargothrond had appeared there again, and the orcs shunned its borders as death. Then I was filled with dread, and I said, 'Alas, Glaurung goes where his orcs dare not, to seek out Turin. Therefore I came hither as swift as might be to warn you and aid you.'"
"Swift, but not swift enough," said Turin.
"Glaurung is dead."
Then the elves looked at him in wonder and said,
"You have slain the great worm. Praised forever shall your name be among elves and men."
"I care not," said Turin, "for my heart also is slain. But since you come from Dorioth, give me news of my kin, for I was told in Dor Lomond that they had fled to the Hidden Kingdom."
The elves made no answer, but at length Mablung spoke.
"They did so, indeed, in the year before the coming of the dragon. But they are not there now, alas."
Then Turin's heart stood still, hearing the feet of doom that would pursue him to the end.
"Say on," he cried, "and be swift."
"They went out into the wild, seeking you," said Mablung. "It was against all counsel, but they would go to Nargothrond when it was known that you were the Black Sword, and Glaurung came forth, and all their guard were scattered. More when none have seen since that day. But Nienor had a spell of dumbness upon her, and fled north into the woods like a wild deer, and was lost." Then, to the wonder of the elves, Turin laughed loud and shrill.
"Is not that a jest?" he cried. "Oh, the fair Nienor! So she ran from Dorioth to the dragon, and from the dragon unto me. What a sweet grace of fortune! Brown as a berry she was, dark was her hair, small and slim as an elf child. None could mistake her."
Then Mablung was amazed, and he said, "But some mistake is here. Not such was your sister. She was tall, and her eyes were blue, her hair fine gold, the very likeness in woman's form of Hurin, her father. You cannot have seen her."
"Can I not? Can I not, Mablung?" cried Turin. "But why no? For see, I am blind. Did you not know? Blind, blind, groping since childhood in a dark mist of Morgoth. Therefore leave me. Go, go, go back to Dorioth, and may winter shrivel it. A curse upon Menegroth, and a curse on your errand. This only was wanting. Now comes the night."
Then he fled from them like the wind, and they were filled with wonder and fear. But Mablung said, "Some strange and dreadful thing has chanced that we know not. Let us follow him and aid him if we may, for now he is fey and witless." But Turin sped far before them and came to Kabed en Arras and stood still, and he heard the roaring of the water
and saw that all the trees near and far were withered, and their sere leaves fell mournfully, as though winter had come in the first days of summer.
Kabed and Aras,
Kabed Nairamarth, he cried, I will not defile your waters where Niniel was washed, for all my deeds have been ill, and the latest the worst. Then he drew forth his sword and said, Hail, Gurthong, Iron of Death, thou alone now remainest. But what lord or loyalty dost thou know, save the hand that wieldeth thee? From no blood wilt thou shrink. Wilt thou take Turin Tarambar? Wilt thou slay me swiftly? And from the blade rang a cold voice in answer. Yea, I will drink thy blood, that I may forget the blood of Beleg, my master, and the blood of Brondir, slain unjustly. I will slay thee swiftly. Then Turin set the hilts upon the ground, and cast himself upon the point of Gurthong, and the black blade took his life. But Mablung came, and looked on the hideous shape of Glaurung, lying dead, and he looked upon Turin, and was grieved, thinking of Hurin, as he had seen him in the Nirnaeth Arnoidiad, and the dreadful doom of his kin. As the elves stood there, men came down from Nengirith to look upon the dragon, and when they saw to what end the life of Turin Tarambar had come, they wept. And the elves, learning at last the reason of Turin's words to them, were aghast. Then Mablung said bitterly, I also have been meshed in the doom of the children of Hurin, and thus with words have slain one that I loved. Then they lifted up Turin, and saw that his sword was broken asunder. So passed all that he possessed. With toil of many hands, they gathered wood and piled it high, and made a great burning, and destroyed the body of the dragon, until he was but black ash, and his bones beaten to dust, and the place of that burning was ever bare and barren thereafter. But Turin they laid in a high mound, where he had fallen, and the shards of Gurthong were set beside him. And when all was done, and the minstrels of elves and men had made lament, telling of the valor of Tarambar, and the beauty of Ninio, a great gray stone was brought and set upon the mound, and thereon the elves carved in the runes of Dorioth. Turin Tarambar, Dagnir Glaurunga. And beneath they wrote also, Nienor, Ninio. But she was not there, nor was it ever known whither the cold waters of Taglin had taken her. Editor, thus ends the tale of the children of Hurin, longest of all the lays of Beleriand. Notes. In an introductory note, existing in different forms, it is said that though made in elvish speech and using much elvish lore, especially of Dorioth, the Narn Ihin Hurin was the work of a mannish poet, Dirhavel, who lived at the havens of Sirion in the days of Earendil, and there gathered all the tidings that he could of the House of Hador, whether among men of elves, remnants and fugitives of Dorloman, of Nargothrond, of Gondolin, or of Dorioth. In one version of this note, Dirhavel is said to have come himself of the House of Hador. This lay, longest of all the lays of Beleriand, was all that he ever made, but it was prized by the Eldar, for Dirhavel used the grey elven tongue, in which he had great skill. He used that mode of elvish verse which was called Minlamed Thent, Estant, and was of old proper to the Narn, a tale that is told in verse, but to be spoken and not sung. Dirhavel perished in the raid of the sons of Feanor upon the havens of Sirion. Appendix. From the point in the story where Turin and his men established themselves in the ancient dwelling of the petty dwarves on Amun-Ruth, there is no completed narrative on the same detailed plan until the Narn takes up again with Turin's journey northwards after the fall of Nargothrond. From many tentative or exploratory outlines and notes, however, some further glimpses can be gained beyond the more summary account in the Silmarillion, and even some short stretches of connected narrative on the scale of the Narn. An isolated fragment describes the life of the outlaws on Amun-Ruth in the time that followed their settlement there, and gives some further description of Bar and Donwedh. Author. For a long while, the life of the outlaws went well to their liking. Food was not scarce, and they had good shelter, warm and dry, with room enough and to spare. For they found that the caves could have housed 100 or more at need. There was another smaller hall further in. It had a hearth at one side, above which a smoke shaft ran up through the rock to a vent, cunningly hidden in a crevice on the hillside. There were also many other chambers, opening out of the halls or the passage between them, some for dwelling, some for works or for stores. In storage, Mim had more arts than they, and he had many vessels and chests of stone and wood that looked to be of great age. But most of the chambers were now empty. In the armories hung axes and other gear rusted and dusty. Shelves and ambries were bare, and the smithies were idle, save one, a small room that led out of the inner hall and had a hearth which shared the smoke vent of the hearth in the hall. There Mim would work at times, but would not allow others to be with him. During the rest of the year, they went on no more raids, and if they stirred abroad for hunting or gathering of food, they went for the most part in small parties. But for a long while they found it hard to retrace their road, and beside Turin not more than 6 of his men became ever sure of the way. Nonetheless, seeing that those skilled in such things could come to their lair without Mim's help, they set a watch by day and night near to the cleft in the north wall. From the south they expected no enemies, nor was there fear of any climbing Amun-Ruth from that quarter. But by day there was at most times a watchman set on the top of the crown who could look far all about. Steep as were the sides of the crown, the summit could be reached, for to the east of the cave mouth rough steps had been hewn, leading up to slopes where men could clamber unaided. So the year wore on without hurt or alarm, but as the days drew in, and the pool became gray and cold, and the birches bare, and great rains returned, they had to pass more time in shelter. Then they soon grew weary of the dark underhill, or the dim half-light of the halls, and to most it seemed that life would be better if it were not shared with Mim. Too often he would appear out of some shadowy corner or doorway when they thought him elsewhere, and when Mim was near, unease fell on their talk. They took to speaking one to another, ever in whispers.